gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to Broken But Glorious.
Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward.
Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined by three-time wrestling author Oliver Newman. How are you this evening, Oliver?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Chris, yourself?
Yeah, I'm really good. Yeah, it's going to be a really good countdown, I think. So tonight we'll be counting down the top 10 Ring of Honor champions, and joining us for this countdown we have a host of the British Wrestle Chat podcast and journalist and Ring of Honor expert, Stephen Jackson. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Oh, thank you for having me. And too many titles past my name now. You know those letters past my on my Twitter hashtag and Twitter handle. But yeah, I'm great. Thank you, and thanks for having me on the podcast to talk about some Ring of Honor.
Cool. Yeah, it's something we've only ever touched on Ring of Honor in the last 2 years. But it's going to be fun to actually have a show that focuses solely on it. So we'll do a little bit of a get to know you, Stephen. So how long have you been a wrestling fan?
It's my 20th year this year being a wrestling fan. So it was back in the days of the Attitude Era, and it was, as I wrote in my first Wrestling Estate article, it was the WrestleMania 14 was kind of when it first sort of took a hold of me. Did wrestling, just seeing the poster with Austin and Shawn and Tyson, but actually watching wrestling was 1999, around obviously the Attitude Era, and when WCW used to be on Channel 5, so that was kind of my first introduction to wrestling. And from there, it kind of spotted a little bit due to not having Sky at home and not having access to cable and things like that. So it kind of was at friends' houses or video games. But then when we got Sky TV, it thankfully came back again, so I was able to follow WWE more regularly. And then from that, when the Wrestling Channel was around, as I wrote in my article, Ring of Honor came out of the blue to me.
Yeah.
Completely different. Never knew it existed. Never knew you expect wrestling just to be this big thing with a big Titantron and big ring, and you know, but then Ring of Honor was a completely different kettle of fish. Small arenas, dark, you know, sort of darkly lit crowd, and a lot more respectful fans, and just a lot more intense actual matches, and just blew me away. And since then, you know, Ring of Honor has always been, you know, my I get classed the Ring of Honor expert by my friends at the Wrestling Estate, but it's just from, I'm just a massive fan of Ring of Honor. And you know, although like my fandom hasn't waned, my interest in it has slightly waned recently, I still follow the product regularly, and I'm still really into a lot of the talent in Ring of Honor. So that's kind of where I am at the moment. So yeah, 20th year this year. So still going strong.
Who were some of your favourite wrestlers growing up?
Loved Bret Hart growing up. I think a lot of British fans loved the Hitman. And I mean, coming into Ring of Honor as well, Bret's style, just if he'd have been in Ring of Honor, I think he would have just been one of the best. Loved Rey Mysterio, still love Rey Mysterio.
It could have been interesting getting him in early Ring of Honor if he didn't get kicked in the head by Goldberg.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a shame. And obviously the concussion situation in Ring of Honor from a certain point, I don't think would have done him any good either.
No.
But yeah, I loved Rey Mysterio and the Cruiserweights. Always had a soft spot for Psicosis or Psychosis and Juventud Guerrera. AJ Styles. And just Steve Austin. Obviously, I loved Steve Austin. Through all his periods, even when he was the stunning Steve Austin, as well as Stone Cold Steve Austin. Brock Lesnar, when he was in his first... I still like Brock now, but during his 2002 to 2004 run, I thought it was awesome. Kurt Angle. And then in sort of recent times, there's been quite a... I mean, I kind of, thanks to PWG and some of the more independent promotions, I've been getting into a lot more of the sort of... Austria Australian and New Zealand talent, so I'm a big fan of Jonah Rock and Robbie Eagles, and I'm a big fan of the Spanish guy, A-Kid, who had that great match with Zack Sabre Jr.
Yeah, I like
so Will Ospreay, and obviously, being British, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith all the way as well, and Nigel McGuinness, the two staples of British wrestling for me, Nigel and Davey Boy. So a wide variety, thanks to, looking on the internet. And I think growing up at a time when wrestling was sort of, it was evolving in a way in a more international sense with the Wrestling Channel and the internet. So, yeah, mainly Bret, Rey Mysterio, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, but then a few other people dotted in.
Yeah, what I liked about early Ring of Honor is they took WCW, the undercard and all the pay-per-views was brilliant, but the main event was crap. So they just took the best bits of the undercard from WCW and then made a promotion around that.
Basically, Eddie Guerrero was on the first Ring of Honor show with Super Crazy, which is on YouTube. That's an awesome. You expect that to have been the main event, but it wasn't. And that's an awesome match.
Did you ever have any ambitions of becoming a wrestler yourself?
I never wanted to become a wrestler. I always wanted to become either a wrestling journalist or a wrestling commentator or sort of critic of it, because when I was younger, I didn't have the sort of athletic frame I didn't really like the thought of being punched, to be honest, in the end and in the face of being, slammed or whatever. But being a commentator was always sort of the aspiration, which it may still be at one day, but I always loved listening to, obviously Jim Ross and even Tony Schiavone. I always thought Tony Schiavone was a brilliant, before it was the whole, this is the greatest night in the history of our sport. But, when he actually was on his A game, he was a great commentator. And Mike Tenay for TNA, I thought he was brilliant and brought that level of authenticity, which, I always wish that Mike Tenay would have been in Ring of Honor, to be honest, because I felt he would have really added, because I feel Ring of Honor, although they have got Ian Riccaboni, who I am a big fan of, I always feel, and Kevin Kelly was fantastic as a commentator for Ring of Honor. I feel it took him a long time to find the feet with commentary. Mm-hmm. And I feel that if Mike Tenay had have been there rather than TNA, he would have helped them in terms of the DVD and video presentation, the overall package on DVD.
Because
I feel the commentary was lacking in certain places. But yeah, either to be a commentator or as you just classed now, a journalist or a critic is always what I've always enjoyed, looking at wrestling from afar as a fan. Mm. That's where I am mainly, so I'm a fan like everyone else.
So how did you get involved in wrestling journalism? How did you get involved in wrestling journalism?
I just sent an email last year to John Corrigan at the Wrestling Estate, who I write for, and just said I've been a fan for nearly 20 years and I'd like to... I did my degree in English literature, so I thought I've always followed it, religiously, and I thought I'd like to share some of my knowledge with fans and see, obviously I'm active on Twitter, and see what sort of, feedback I get, and it's an experiment, so if it worked and it got a lot of positive feedback, then great, but if it didn't, I gave it a go, so then I just sent John an email with my 5-3 Ring of Honor matches, and, he just said it was great, and from there I've become a focal part of the team, thankfully, and had some really nice comments from my peers as well as some wrestlers as well. I mean, I got retweeted and commented by, if you look on my Twitter profile, from Matt Hardy, which was a huge compliment, to me, to have one of my idols, actually read something I'd written about them on the way to work on the bus by, without checking it or anything, just because I was running late on the article itself. So, just kind of an organic thing. And then from there, it's just grown and trying to cover parts of the industry which, may not be as regularly covered as other parts of the industry. I mean, you sort of like you get WWE and Impact to Overload, and I think there's sort of a gap in certain places where certain independent promotions, which are doing a lot of good things, including Ring of Honor, need to be focused on more and, given more appreciation. So it just came about gradually from my fandom and just thanks to John for giving me a chance, which, you know, has led to this chat today. Yeah. So I owe John a lot.
So you've recently released your first episode of British Wrestle Chat. Tell us about your show and what have you got? What's the plan for the show?
Yeah, so it's me and Aaron Green. Again, just emailed Aaron one day and he said he was looking for hosts. So I just said, oh, you know, if you need somebody to co-host with you, I'd be glad to. And he's like, all right, you're the co-host. It's like, all right, okay. So it was a bit of a, you know, the deep end thing. But a bit like a lot of podcasts, really. It's just sort of a general chat about, you know, about the industry. I mean, we've just done one episode so far and we're due to shoot another episode tomorrow, which I think we're going to do more kind of a fantasy sort of booking style from and sort of a preview of the G1 Climax, which New Japan announced, which I'm really excited for, as well as Best in the World.
Both the blocks look amazing.
They are. But I think both blocks look incredible. I'm so glad that, you know, Will Ospreay and Shingo have, you know, both got into the... you know, both got into the G1 Climax, because I was ranting on a private chat with John of the Wrestling Estate, who I'm all right for, that Shingo should be in the heavyweight scene, because he was in the heavyweight scene of Dragon Gate and things. So it's great to see him and Ospreay, you know, getting that chance. And yes, we've got that lined up, and just when we get chance, just to talk about wrestling. So the first episode was about Double or Nothing, and it was covering the, you know, the car crash, which is the 24/7 title in WWE, which looks horrible.
Best thing about WWE, though. R-Truth got voted the fans' most favourite champion at the moment.
On a poll. Oh, did they?
Yeah. So, where can the listeners find your work and your podcast?
You can find me at Steejay215. That's my actual Twitter feed. The Brit Wrestle Chat can be found on Twitter, if you have Twitter, at Brit Wrestle Chat, and it's available on Podbean. And I think if you search, Podbean's a funny one because I was trying to look for it on the actual search engine. I think if you write in Brit Wrestle Chat, it should hopefully come up. But if anyone has any issues, you're quite welcome to send me a tweet at Steejay215, or you can tweet the Brit Wrestle Chat at Brit Wrestle Chat, and you can find my work with my written work at the Wrestling Estate, where I write with John and a load of other writers the majority of them are from America, so across the pond. And they're available on Twitter as well, at the Wrestling Est. So that's at the Wrestling EST. And you can also, if people have it as well, find me on LinkedIn. I have LinkedIn, so if anyone wants to be a corporate sort of the corporate side of me, I am on LinkedIn at Stephen Ronald Jackson, which is my middle name, so you can find me. That little tidbit there. So that's where you can find my work and my you know, the rest of my colleagues' work as well.
Cool, and so we'll be counting down the top 10 after this quick word from powerslam.tv.
Are you tired of the same old pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world! Get over 4,000 hours of the best pro wrestling events from over 110 of the biggest names in the industry from over 15 countries around the globe. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
So shall we start with a short history of the ROH world title? So the championship was created and debuted on the 27th of July 2002. At the events, Loki defeated Christopher Daniels, Sparky Plug. Doug Williams in a Fatal 4-Way 60-minute Iron Man match to become the inaugural champion.
That match so long.
I'd love WWE to do a Fatal 4-Way Iron Man match. I think NXT could pull that off.
I think the rules for the Iron Man match were a bit strange as well. But pinfalls, well, wins and losses, and it was about points and stuff, which probably made Stephen think it was the longest match in history.
It was a really good match, but I just felt it was very, like a lot of early Ring of Honor things, it just felt quite long-winded. I mean, I love Ring of Honor in its early days, but it just felt very, I don't know, it just took a, it got exciting for the last 20 minutes, but the first 40, I felt it kind of dragged in parts, and low-key took advantage of a few people and gave them a few stiff shots, which, as, you know, low-key loves to do anyway. So... But,
in all honesty, though, didn't they say they were performing like 100 degrees heat?
Yeah.
That might have been one of the reasons why. But
yeah.
I do see where you're coming from watching it as a wrestling fan. It did feel quite long. Obviously,
yeah.
The action's going to be fantastic with the four competitors mentioned. But, it did feel like a long-winded match.
But it was unique. Definitely, it was, at least it was unique, and it was something what, you know, was fun, unlike, you know, a lot of, as I said just a minute ago, the 24/7 title, which poor Mick Foley had to hold up and pretend was this great championship, which just looks like some kid's pocket watch or something, which just
We'll start our top 10. So in at number 10 we have CM Punk.
Incredible reign.
Yeah, so Punk held the title for only 55 days, defending it four times, but it can be argued it's the most memorable Ring of Honor title run, even though it wasn't particularly long.
Yeah, it was definitely, for me, it was definitely the one which had the first storyline built around the Ring of Honor championship, definitely. And it was a reign which, you know, turned Punk into, I think, those fans absolutely hated him. And, you know, the amount of heel things, what he was doing is that, you know, in that reign were, you know, despicable, like writing his WWE contract on the title.
Yeah.
And, you know, treating everyone like dirt, all the challengers, and then also had that four-way, which I think was his best match, which led into James Gibson then winning the championship against Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, and, you know, James Gibson. So it was a really... It was definitely the most, even today, the most talked about reign, I think, in Ring of Honor history, and kind of history repeated itself when he got the title in 2011, when it kind of had a similar...
Very similar.
You know,
total rip off.
Yeah.
The only thing that surprised me with this is number 10.
Yeah.
For all the reasons you guys just gave, I mean, this is the one title reign, I think, at the 10, off the top of my head, where you kind of had to watch the segments as well as the matches.
Yeah.
Because they were important, obviously. We've just mentioned he signed his WWE contract on the Ring of Honor World Championship.
Yeah. It was just one of the, I think, as well with this reign.
This is somebody that, for years, since coming into the company in 2002, wanted nothing more than to be the Ring of Honor World Champion. If you look at the matches, Samoa Joe, he went 60 minutes on two occasions. He wanted this Ring of Honor Championship, and then, like Stephen's just mentioned, the disrespect that he shows by signing his WWE contract on top of the championship is just completely flipped the switch. The Austin Aries match that, you know, has been mentioned in the direct messages on a BWW pod. You know, 14 years ago today, he beat Austin Aries for the Ring of Honor World title.
Yeah.
It was one of, you know, they leaked that. Well, it was said that Punk was going to WWE, so the fans were like, there's no way he's winning the title. And then when he did win the title, what's going to happen next with the title, because he's going... the post-match speech after he wins the title, and he says he's a snake.
Yeah.
And he bit the old man, well, I'm a snake, what did you expect? And the fans were like, oh, yeah, we knew this was going to happen, but none of them had a clue. And then Christopher Daniels comes back, doesn't he? After being at the company for so long. And then, obviously, the four matches that you've mentioned, in those matches, he's bought Roderick Strong was one of the matches. Jay Lethal was another one.
Yeah.
There was the four-way match. I'm not quite sure who the of Christopher Daniels in a 60-minute match, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he brought two young competitors up to the next level during those matches. The segments were must-see because you didn't know what was going to happen next. He said he wasn't going to turn up because he was in a mini feud with Mick Foley, wasn't he, saying,
"Yeah,
oh, I'm not going to turn up. I'm going to WWE. I'm going to take the Ring of Honor world title with me." And then, like you said, it's probably one of the best matches of Punk's Ring of Honor career, in all honesty, the four-way match, way elimination match, and obviously... I think that he beat Samoa Joe, didn't he, for the first time, if I remember correctly, during that four-way match.
Yeah.
And, brilliant to put it under James Gibson, and then in turn it goes to, you know, somebody else we're going to be talking about during this top 10. Mm-hmm. But no, in terms of segments and matches, I guess because it's a short reign, that's why it's number 10. But this was one of the best Ring of Honor world title reigns for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being from start to finish.
I was going to say, because he was such a bad heel, it was so jarring when he turned up in ECW, as a smiley baby face.
It was
quite jarring.
Well, he didn't find his feet in WWE until he turned on Jeff Hardy, did he? Mm. Really? That's some of the best work of his career. So, he's just somebody... You know, when he shoves down your throat that he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't do drugs, and he's better than you, was his catchphrase. Fans hated him for that. Before all of this ROH title reign and stuff. So he found his feet in WWE because Jeff Hardy had his issues with drugs and alcohol and stuff. And when he was able to be that CM Punk, that's what got him to the top of the card. So just love to be hated, but absolutely brilliant. Sorry if I've stolen some of your material there, Steve.
I
watched intently.
It's fine. I was just about to say as well, the one thing about that reign, I think, which gets overlooked, or a lot of Ring of Honor champions have sadly lacked, which I think that reign had a lot of, was it had a lot of raw emotion in it, and it felt the fans really had a connection with it, mm-hmm. like in terms of a character perspective, whereas I feel sometimes with some Ring of Honor champions, it's all about the matches and there isn't any actual character work, whereas I felt like with Punk, it was a lot like an early ECW, or it was like an ECW sort of reign where, the character as much as the matches made it into a whole championship reign, and like we said, although Punk didn't have the length of other champions, his reign itself is so well remembered because of those segments on top of the matches. It is probably in terms of a storyline anyway, the most iconic Ring of Honor storyline, I think, what has been, arguably. I'd say that personally, but other people may think differently. And it was great to see the Ring of Honor Championship in such a focal position in the company. And finally for Punk to hold it and, then go on to WWE. You didn't steal any of my my material, Oliver, so don't worry.
Would you compare the disrespect that he showed for the ROH World title to when Shane Douglas threw down the NWA title in ECW?
Absolutely. I think, you can see the influence there. In that promo he cut, and I feel that the fan reaction, I think, if you watch it on tape, I think they were shocked because the Ring of Honor Championship has such prestige behind it and such respect behind it. It feels like when they obviously hold the IWGP Championship up, and the crowd obviously applauds because of its heritage. Even though it was such a short amount of time that it was around at that point, it still had such a heritage behind it, and everything about it just was very reminiscent of Shane Douglas throwing down the NWA world title, that disrespect. It really shocked me, actually, seeing it on tape, just how passionate the fans were about the championship, because it showed just how passionate the fans were for the company. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do feel that it did have elements of Shane Douglas's NWA sort of throw down, if you want to call it that, in it. So, yeah, definitely.
All right, so at number nine, so we have Davey Richards. So Richards held the title for 321 days, defended it 10 times. So it was when I might flip between Daniel Bryan and Ryan Danielson. I need to, every time I go to, I wrote it down as Daniel Danielson, but I still want to say Daniel Bryan. So when Bryan Danielson left,
Danielson.
He left the Ring of Honor. So if the American Dragon was going to be succeeded, it needs to be the American Wolf, Davey Richards, as well, overwhelming favorite at the time. So Richards will capture it from his long-term tag team partner and friend of the show, Eddie Edwards.
That was an incredible match, that Best in the World contest. I think that was a great match in the Hammerstein Ballroom when he won the championship. The thing about Davey Richards, though, at that point, I feel that the chase had been a bit too long.
Yeah.
I feel that it had kind of... I think Eddie Edwards' reign, when he beat Roderick Strong, was a lot more explosive than a shock, because no one expected it. Literally no one expected it to happen, but with Davey Richards it had been almost like about a year, about 18 months where people had been expecting it to happen, and then it kind of fizzled, which I think is why he isn't viewed on as highly as other champions, and his promo work wasn't as strong at that point. It was kind of in a bit of a, if you look back retrospectively, he wasn't on his A game like he had been when he was a challenger, but he still had great matches, great defences, and I mean, he had the second, in terms of the star ratings and the Wrestling Observer, he had the second ever Ring of Honor World Championship match to be rated 5 stars against Michael Elgin at Showdown in the Sun Night 2 in 2012, which is just an absolutely unbelievable match. Absolutely. Yeah. And Michael Elgin's coming out party. Just crazy, crazy physical. And I think that was where the real Davey Richards lay. And that had to be laid dormant because of other political things, possibly. But if people want to see a kind of wondering why David Richards may be even on this countdown, I think that match alone is a reason why he is there. Just phenomenal match.
Yeah, as you mentioned with the CM Punk had the character, but David Richards had the great matches, which is probably why he's slightly above CM Punk, even though it's maybe not the most memorable reign from a storyline point of view. So.
I really like the match he had against El Jericho as well at Glory Bound 10, which sadly is, you can only see that either if you have the Honor Club or bought the DVD. I thought they had awesome chemistry, those two, and that was a really great match at the Chicago Frontier Fieldhouse in front of a hot crowd. So it's a reign which sadly isn't looked on in. It's sadly overlooked, but it shouldn't be as overlooked as it is. I feel it did have some good moments dotted about here and there.
Okay, so
this is one of the reigns that I didn't see that much of, but I years later saw that match with Michael Elgin, and I completely agree with you, Stephen. It's a match that's out of this world. I think the only little comment I want to make on this is the title chase, and that's what kind of gets thrown at Ring of Honor, and it's really true, in all honesty. In certain instances, they haven't known when to pull the trigger on somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll discuss that further going forward. But Davey Richards is amazing in the ring. That match against Michael Elgin at Showdown in the Sun was unbelievable. So, yeah, he deserves to be in the top 10 for that reason alone, really.
Definitely. just to go forward, that Tiger a suplex from the top rope, which he delivered to Michael Elgin on the back of his head, I think it's one of the scariest things I've ever seen in wrestling. Just to go forward, absolutely terrified.
Alright, so in at number 8 we have Jay Briscoe. So he's a 2-time Ring of Honor champion. He also is a 10-time Ring of Honor tag team champion with his brother Mark, and has been with the company from day one and is a true ROH legend. He had combined reigns of 375 days, defended 18 times. He won his first title from Kevin Steen in front of his whole family at Supercard of Honor 7.
In the Hammerstein Ballroom, fantastic match.
Yeah.
And, you know, the the history between those two from being tag team competitors as well, and their feuds with with each other. That was one of those Ring of Honor. I think when Ring of Honor does it right in terms of a storyline perspective, it does it right, and it felt such a historic. If you'd followed Ring of Honor for years, like a lot of diehard fans have, including mm-hmm. me, to see those two who had fought from that, that feud as tag team competitors to being in the main event at WrestleMania weekend for the Ring of Honor Championship, both obviously would eventually hold the title. It was such an emotional match. It might not have been a 5-star classic in terms of technical ability or in terms of sort of all those traditional supposed Ring of Honor traits, but it was such an emotional and exciting match to watch, and to see Jay finally get the world championship after so being there since the first show was a great moment, I think, for all Ring of Honor fans, and I think all the wrestling community, to be honest. It was a big deal at the time. I
remember being very shocked that he won it.
Yeah. And I think it showed a lot from then going forward. It was definitely his singles coming out party, because he'd always been a challenger for the championship but never won it. But then when he actually had the championship, he was able to show a lot more. I mean, obviously being coupled with Mark as a tag team competitor, I think it kind of hindered him in certain ways. And one of them was his singles, the quality of his singles matches. And then with that reign as Ring of Honor champion, he was able to come out and show that he was able to wrestle great singles matches, and his matches he had with Adam Cole, and the matches he then later had with Kevin Steen, the later ones from that particular match, and Jay Lethal, just amazing matches. And he's so followed as a Ring of Honor ambassador and franchise player, mm-hmm. that it felt like a really sort of fulfilling reign.
Once again, it's a title, like I've seen different matches in that reign, I guess, and I think I saw like a match with Lethal. I think in terms of what Steven said, the backstory to Kevin Steen against Jay Briscoe was amazing. Obviously, Steen and Generico against the Briscoe brothers, and if you was like me and Steve and I, long-term Ring of Honor fans, then you'd get behind the story in general. But obviously a fantastic tag team with his brother Mark, and obviously tag team champions. And yeah, it was whether he would reach the mountain, wasn't it, in general?
Yeah.
Because obviously, being a singles wrestler, it tended to be against his brother, so... it was fantastic to see him reach the top of the mountain in the first place, really. And then to have a really long reign over the reigns that he's had, then, it's really good.
Some great promos as well. Got some great promos, and complete champion, I think, again, like CM Punk, where he had that whole package, which thankfully Ring of Honor didn't just go, it wasn't sort of like he was doing a carry job. He did thankfully get a long reign, and he did have a lot of great feuds and matches, and it was a great moment for a lot of diehard Ring of Honor fans to see him win it. So he's another worthy person on this countdown.
All right, so you might need to help me with the pronunciation, number 7. So it's Takeshi Morishima?
Takeshi Morishima.
Yeah,
he
got it.
Long time listeners know I can't say
the Japanese pronouncing, Chris, so I appreciate that.
Long time listeners know we all can't. None of us can pronounce the Japanese words. Alright, so he is a monster heel. No one could beat him. He could beat the Japanese wrecking ball. He defended it all over the world against Austin Aries, Adam Pearce, Jimmy Rave, Kenta. So.
Shingo. Great match against Shingo as well.
Yeah.
But a massive Morishima fan. Another Ring of Honor. I think that's one of the great things about the Ring of Honor World Championship is that it's been held by so many people from so many different countries and regions, and Morishima is currently the only Ring of Honor world champion to date, and that Noah style which he brought, that Puro style which Ring of Honor obviously took on board with the American indie talent, he then brought in, you know, full force, and it was just, you know, an absolute wrecking ball, and very much like Terry Gordy during the 80s for the Fabulous Freebirds, but so athletic. Some of the stuff what Takeshi Morishima could do was scary. Mm-hmm. And the match against Bryan Danielson where he actually dislocated his retina at Man Up, which is I think was his best match, was Manhattan Mayhem 2 was where he dislocated the retina, but then the match after that at Man Up where he was elbowing Bryan Danielson's head and the AI was just brutal. Oh. It was terrifying. Pretty lightly.
I completely agree with you, Stephen, honestly. He came in and he was just a wrecking ball. You know, he had that match with Samoa Joe, didn't he? Because they teased that.
Yeah, they had that over here in the UK. But I thought it was a bit of a letdown because I think we all expected something like two behemoths going at each other and gonna, you know, I think they'd. It's kind of
that when Joe was leaving?
Yeah, it was his second to last match, I think, in the company. I think it was a 50-year festival. You can correct me if I'm wrong, any fans listening, but I think it was 50-year festival, London possibly, or one of those. It was definitely the second to last show, but I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
I was going to say I was at the Liverpool show.
And Liverpool, that's it.
He took on the homicide.
Oh, was it?
Somebody else was lucky enough to see that live. But yeah, that match with Danielson, when the detached retina and stuff was absolutely shocking in terms of brutality. And then for him to be the champion when Noah was absolutely amazing at that time, wasn't it? You know, from about 2000 until about 2008, but probably the same in terms of my viewing of Ring of Honor, because of the Wrestling Channel, which I'm sure you saw Noah on as well.
Yeah.
Like 2002 to 2009-10, Pro Wrestling Noah was amazing.
Yeah.
And New Japan was so far back that, you know, you couldn't even see New Japan at that time. Once again, that was on the Wrestling Channel, but New Japan was nowhere near pro wrestling, nowhere in terms of standard of wrestling. It was incredible. But Morishima, hugely important champion. And if I'm, that's what I'll say at this point.
Should we move on to number six? Number six is Austin Aries. Aries was the first two-time Ring of Honor world champion. He had a combined reign of 419 days and defended the title 29 times. So Aries was the one who defeated Joe after his mammoth 21-month reign in a timeless classic.
Yeah. I'm thinking this is another one I want to get on. This shows what happens when you build your champion.
Yeah.
Because Austin Aries came into the company with Generation Next, which was Aries, Shelley, Strong, and Jack Evans, and they were obviously amazing new wrestlers and stuff. And all of a sudden he's built up, and then he's going up against Samoa Joe, and everyone's like, "There's no way he's beating Samoa Joe." And not only does he beat Samoa Joe, but he beats him clean. And all of a sudden you've built yourself a brand new star.
Yeah.
And Austin Aries with Roderick Strong was a fantastic tag team against the aforementioned, you know, Jay Briscoe and Mark Briscoe. They had some fantastic title matches, including Unified, which we talked about off air. So Aries was somebody who come through, and it was amazing. I think the second title reign was another one of those instances where they didn't really pull the trigger on time. you know, there'd been a number of matches between him and somebody else who I can't remember at this moment in time, but, you know, it was like, oh, well, if he's going to win the title, but they kind of took steam after the second title reign, where they built up so much with the first one, and he was obviously, you know, he won the title at Final Battle 2004.
Yeah.
And till Death Before Dishonor 3, didn't they? Against, once again, the aforementioned CM Punk. So, it all blends into each other, doesn't it?
It does, it's a big circle.
Yeah, and obviously was just incredible in the ring. I don't know if you found his, you know, his interview chops at the time, but yeah, really, you know, really great wrestler. And it was a huge shock. Another DVD that I bought, and I was like, I've got to see this match because stuff wasn't really put on YouTube. You couldn't really watch it, you know, any other way. And
Gear put it down as soon as it was put up. Piracy, police.
Yeah, and now I can completely understandable because the DVD prices weren't that bad. I mean, I didn't say this off air, but I'll say it now. At one time, because I was trying to build up every ROH show, I wanted every single one of them. I bought like 20 DVDs at one time, and the price wasn't ridiculous. So support the product, and that's what I'll say to people with All Elite Wrestling and stuff. People are saying, oh, you know, we're going to illegally stream this and stuff. Well, I paid £15. You know, I'm not currently working. Support the product, don't. You know, don't steal from it. You know what I mean? I feel the exact same way when people do this with, you know, with Ring of Honor or somebody else. You know, I've just, you know, got High Spots TV application for a month. It's cost me £8, and you've got access to thousands of hours of footage. So, you know, whatever you do, support the product. Don't kind of steal from it. I know that sounds like a PSA, but It's completely true. You want people to be successful, you've got to support them, haven't you, really?
Yeah, exactly. And it's the way those people get paid at the end of the day. And, you know, it was one of the shows which are similar to you, I sort of originally spotted certain shows which I'd wanted to see after reading a lot of reviews and picking which shows were the ones to watch. One of them was Manhattan. The first Manhattan Mayhem and the match against Alex Shelley, which we talked about off air, that I think was Austin Aries' best title reign of his first, best match of his first title reign. It was just such an electric atmosphere, and Alex Shelley and Aries had great chemistry, and it was a fantastic, just classic wrestling match, and I think it's. I didn't really have a lot. Ironically, I didn't really have a lot to say about Austin Aries. He was a champion, although I really respect his work. I feel that his impact actually.
Sorry, one second, Steve. Did you see the match between Aries and James Gibson at Stalemate?
I did. I have seen that once, and I can vaguely remember it. But it's not one of those standout matches, which.
Oh wow! I thought that was incredible. If you're talking about one of the best matches, you're in. You know, you're allowed to say Alex Shelley and stuff, but in terms of his best match in the title reign, that wasn't CM Punk. I think that James Gibson match was Stalemate. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, I have heard about that one. I might go back and watch it again now. That's always a good thing as well, is that, you know, you forget. I think Ring of Honor is one of those promotions as well where there's so many matches with so many, a bit like ECW with so many different people, and I think that's one of those. Especially of the earlier days, which I need to go back and definitely, now you've said it, go and watch. Maybe I need to re-watch Austin Aries' reign to get more of an appreciation for it. But I do appreciate that he was a brilliant champion, and he had some, you know, especially when he was a leader of Generation Next, he was an awesome, and he, obviously, like we said, he conquered the streak as well, the Samoa Joe streak. So he's obviously in the history books for that as well. So... yeah, definitely deserves to be on the countdown along with the rest of the people, definitely.
I think the high point was seen as the, you know, the win, you know, the win against Samoa Joe, but
yeah,
his actual title reign, I think match consistency wise, is up there. I think
yeah. There
is a bad match in the title reign, and they're either good or really good,
mm-hmm. Or
insane, fantastic. And I think it's one of those that goes under the radar, in all honesty, because
yeah. Of
him beating Joe. So, yeah, the 2005 Ring of Honor DVDs and stuff, or Honor Club if it's available, definitely go back and watch some of those Austin Aries matches, because they're incredible. Like I said, James Gibson out of nowhere. Who would think that him and Austin Aries could have, you know, an amazing match, but
yeah. It's
just a testament to both men. And like you said, Shelley was just finding his feet in the company, but him and Aries had a fantastic match. Punk and Aries at Death Before Dishonor. You know, that's three matches in, you know, he had like a 6 month reign, didn't he? Well,
yeah. We
just took three matches and it was mostly one a month. So those three matches are worth watching out of the 6 month reign already. So, yeah, it's one that must be underappreciated, but the match consistency is absolutely fantastic.
Definitely.
I'm looking forward to, he's just signed for MLW, so I'm really looking forward to seeing more of him. And he said he's going to focus on the middleweight division, so having him against Teddy Hart is going to be amazing in the coming months.
That would be incredible, that one.
Yeah.
The attitudes of the two people should be interesting as well.
Yeah.
I think they'll be explosive in more ways than one.
That's the unfortunate thing that goes against both guys, isn't it, really? And like you mentioned about Loki earlier, I just wonder if attitudes had been right across the board with those three gentlemen, where they'd be, really.
Yeah.
Unfortunate, because people can't hold a candle to him when it comes to wrestling ability in certain instances.
No.
Definitely not.
All right, are you ready to say baby? Number five, it's Adam Cole.
Adam Cole, baby!
It's always fun to
say. Yeah. Adam Cole's the only person to hold the title three times. He had a combined reign of 445 days. He defended it 22 times. So following Jay Briscoe, was forced to relinquish the title due to it wasn't a real injury. It was a kayfabe injury, wasn't it?
It was a real injury. It was his shoulder, I think, and then it became like a kayfabe storyline with the real world championship. But Jay didn't want to. The sort of kayfabe part was Jay didn't want to drop the title, but then obviously there was a bit of sort of beef between the two of them, because Adam Cole was kind of vying for a chance at the title, but a bit of both. One of those grey areas.
So then a tournament was set up to crown a new champion. The finals between Michael Elgin and Adam Cole in September 2013 at Before Dishonor 11.
It was I love Adam Cole. I've loved Adam Cole since the first time I saw him back in 2009, in the early days when he was in CZW, when he was in Dragon Gate USA, and obviously went over to Ring of Honor and just found his feet. And, you know, it was just... I mean, again, he held the PWG title early. He won that first before he won the Ring of Honor World Championship. So although a lot of people on the internet were saying that he kind of should have had the Ring of Honor Championship longer,
yeah.
I feel that the PWG champion, sorry, sooner, and he should have than he did. I feel that the PWG Championship reign helped him to get to that Ring of Honor World Championship level. And he's just amazing. He's such an incredible one-off talent. I always feel like a lot of people, is the second coming of Shawn Michaels, in that
yeah. He's
just got, I mean, might be the super kick or whatever, but he just has that arrogance to him, but he's just got incredible promos, incredible match quality, brilliant feuds against Jay Briscoe, his awesome feud with Roderick Strong, and obviously his former Future Shock, and now Undisputed Era cohort, Kyle O'Reilly.
Oh, they had a match at Wrestle Kingdom, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just... I just really love Adam call. And I just feel that he, even though he's held the championship three times, and some people might think, oh, you know, the longer the reign and the more defences you have at the championship, especially during a Ring of Honor World Championship, you know, sort of grade you as a champion. But I feel that Adam Cole kind of is an exception to that rule. And he's, according to what I've read and according to what I've seen, I think he's the only man to win the champion, the Ring of Honor World Championship in Japan as well, because he won it at Wrestle Kingdom 11 against Kyle O'Reilly. Just after their match at a final battle 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So he made history as well in that sense. So, I think he's just an absolutely awesome talent. And it was his coming out party when he won the championship, and he had a great reign, great second reign. And just, love Adam Cole. So, yeah.
I think in this instance, like I said before, it was a, I knew the name Adam Cole. I knew about Future Shock with Kyle O'Reilly. I think I've kind of been more appreciative of his work in NXT than ROH. Did he get injured during his, say, second or his third title reign? Because he had a really bad injury, didn't he, Stephen?
Yeah, he got injured during his, sadly, during his second reign. I think it was a shoulder injury, if I remember rightly. I might be at the end of the first reign, because I remember he came back at Global Wars to face AJ Styles in Philadelphia, so it might have been the end of his first reign. I can't remember just off the top of my head, but yeah, he did get injured, which did have an effect. But he may have as well, like, because what that did, I think, was he played it to his advantage. Because he just was able to take the promos to the next level, which I feel at times Ring of Honor all across the board have really lacked, and I feel that he was able to give that next level of promo. As we've just mentioned, the aforementioned Austin Aries, he was able to deliver those great promos. CM Punk was able to deliver those great promos. Adam Cole, thankfully, was able to deliver those great promos, but only after he was injured and he had the time, I think, to develop his, because Adam Cole's story time was the segment. Yeah. He was able to develop those promos and those interview skills even more than he already had. So
Adam Cole, for instance, where they pulled the trigger on him too late?
I think he did. I think they did. Like I said a minute ago with the PWG reign, I feel that PWG took the chance when Ring of Honor should have taken the chance. And I feel that although it's a difficult one, because I feel that Adam Cole it took him a while to get his mojo together in Ring of Honor, I think. But when he did find his mojo, he was just on a... He's probably the most unique talent, I think the most complete talent to come out of Ring of Honor, who's gone to WWE, even more so than Bryan Danielson, which might shock a lot of people. But I think we're seeing that now in NXT. But I do feel that he was another case where they should have pulled the trigger a lot sooner. But he did finally, thankfully, get the World Championship. He did win it. After winning that tournament, which although isn't the most memorable tournament, it did have some great matches in it. So, maybe it's just because I'm so biased towards him as a talent, and I'm kind of a super fan of Adam Cole, so I don't like saying negative things about him. but they probably didn't pull the trigger soon enough on Adam, sadly. But he still deserves to be, I think, the fifth person in this countdown, definitely.
Some people might wonder why we've got this person number four, but we've got Samoa Joe at number four. So Samoa Joe held the title for a mammoth 645 days, defending it 29 times before losing it to Austin Aries at Final Battle 2004. Many say the highlight of his dominant run was his trilogy of matches with CM Punk, where the first one went to an hour-long draw, and the second match again went an hour-long draw, and it became the ROH's first five-star rated match from Dave Meltzer.
Firstly, England under-21s have taken the lead against France. Phil Foden just scored 1-0, so that's good. Samoa Joe's Rain is just a fantastic, you know, Ring of Honor world title reign. Firstly, you know, he lost it to somebody who was hated in Xavier. So, but that's good because, you know, obviously, when we talk about champions and stuff, was there any real hatred of the champion before the challenger won the title? And I can put Xavier in probably the top five Ring of Honor champions where they actually really did hate him. They wanted Paul London to win. They wanted AJ Styles to win, low-key, obviously lost the title in nefarious circumstances. They basically wanted anyone to be Xavier.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? So that's a feather in his cap, first of all. But when Samoa Joe did it, it was like, okay, there isn't anyone in this company that is like Joe, so who's going to beat him? And then, like I've just said before, Paul London had a chance at Death Before Dishonor, even though he was leaving to go into WWE.
Love that match. Joe, just to cut in,
it was an incredible match, and that's coming from a Paul London super fan. Paul London's probably, you know, my Adam Cole, Stephen, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
in terms of your super fandom. Yeah, he took on everybody. He had a fantastic... It wasn't part of his ROH World Title reign, but if you haven't seen it, go back and watch Samoa Joe versus Loki from Glory by Honor.
Brilliant.
That's probably the reason why he became ROH champion in honesty. Match consistency, he's there. He had some brilliant little, packages when he was like training in the ring on the Wrestling Channel.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever saw them. But when he was like choking out Jay Lethal and stuff. that was some wicked things. That's one of like the really cool things in early Ring of Honor, man. It's just like, I loved it. I really loved that part of it. And then, yeah, like I said, the matches with Punk, this might shock some, people and stuff, but I think the third match with Punk is probably the best one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to say All-Star Weekend, but that's because of the PWG we've been talking about. That match was fantastic. Because obviously the other two matches were 60 minutes and went to a draw. I don't know, went to a draw in both instances, sorry. So I don't know if my watching of wrestling, if I could have handled that time, but the third match was absolutely fantastic. And then, like we said before, it all blends into one. The Austin Aries match, for somebody who's losing the title, he still went all out to put the other guy over, and Aries got a lot from it. Joe got a lot from holding the title that long. And in all honesty, if you look at if you was a wrestler between say 2002 and I'll say about 2009 2010, if you were to hold any world championship in the world, I think you'd want to hold a Ring of Honor world title, and that's a testament to what people like Samoa Joe did with it.
Yeah.
England have just gone 2-0.
Yeah.
So I have read that some people say that there wouldn't have been a Ring of Honor without the reign of Samoa Joe. What do you guys think of that?
I completely agree, because he saved, from what I've heard and read, the whole Feinstein controversy. Rob Feinstein was the co-owner with Gabe Sapolsky, and there was a big controversy with, you can find it on the internet, but Samoa Joe, there was a lot of talk that Ring of Honor may have had to have gone out of business because of what Feinstein had brought against the company.
Yeah.
And I feel that Gabe gave him a chance, Samoa Joe, and I feel that Samoa Joe's reign as a whole, I put in my notes what we've come up with for the podcast, but I said it's the Bruno rain, so the Bruno San Martino sort of rain, where it's that early sort of mythical rain, which, you know, is sort of viewed upon like some sort of, you know, mythical.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like he really had that that held it for that many days in one go. He really defeated that many people. It's like, well, he did, you know, and you can see them all if you, you know, and I think with Joe as well, what he, if, I mean, where. I feel so sorry for WWE fans now because they're seeing Samoa Joe, I feel, a bit like the Andre situation, Andre the Giant situation, where it's like he still can deliver it, but during that 2003, 2004, 2005 period when he was the champion fighting for the title again, or, you know, he was just on fire, Samoa Joe. He was just an absolute, a bit like Morishima, he was a wrecking ball and he was just brutal, and he brought that level of honour to the championship. He was a proper combatant, which I feel is what made Ring of Honor stand out and made them unique. And he, you know, one of the matches which I feel in his reign, which gets overlooked, and it is brilliant but so, so horrible and, you know, violent to watch, is the one against Jay Briscoe and the cage match. Talk about the Muta scale and the Crimson Mask. Oh my god. It's like, absolutely, like an old, as Jim Cornette would say, an old mid-Atlantic, or, you know, like an old mid-South match. And he just made the championship. If it hadn't have been for Samoa Joe, who knows what would have happened to the Ring of Honor championship. It might have been, there wouldn't be a Ring of Honor, so we have to owe Samoa Joe a hell of a lot, and Ring of Honor does as well, because and he also made the championship a headline act. It was like it became, as you said, Oliver, it was the championship everyone wanted to hold, and everyone wanted to, you know, to eventually, he created the prestige, which, you know, everyone in this countdown wanted to hold and to be noticed by. So I think Samoa Joe's the reason we're actually talking about this now. He may not be as high as other people, but I think that's because some of his matches over time they weren't as good. Like, at the time, they were great, but in retrospect, they weren't as good as other people's. But he still, you know, has to be seen to be believed just how good he was. Definitely.
I think if it wasn't for Samoa Joe and CM Punk, then ROH might be out of business. Because they lost AJ Styles, they lost Christopher Daniels to TNA, and then obviously Paul London went to WWE as well. I think that was part of it. In terms of Samoa Joe, I think he can absolutely still go. I think they just don't allow him to in WWE.
Yeah.
It was short matches against Rey Mysterio and stuff. You allow those two those two guys to go 15, 20 minutes on the pay-per-view, and it'd be one of the matches of the year.
Yeah.
In my mind. Just to give Samoa Joe a little bit more credit, you said he was on fire between, you know, 2000 and, you know, 2 to 6 or what have you. During his TNA heavyweight title run as well against Kurt Angle, some of the matches he had into TNA were amazing. Against the aforementioned Kurt Angle, but he also had some really good matches against other people. So, yeah, we're just not seeing the best of Samoa Joe currently, but that's more down to the booking and the time restraints that are putting on, really.
Yeah.
It's your boy Hot Fire, and you're tuning in to Broken But Glorious.
Actually, we're into the top three. So, in at number three, we have Bryan Danielson. So, he held the title for 462 days and defended it 38 times. So, following the short hiatus from the company, Danielson returned and defeated James Gibson. WWE fans know him as Jamie Noble, or Jay from JJ Security, in a technical masterpiece.
They probably know him more from JJ Security, you know, than Jamie Noble.
Yeah.
And that's pretty damn sad, isn't it, really?
It is,
considering how good he is. But one of the best things, Stephen, because I mean, you're super fan for ROH, Danielson leaving in the first place to when he returned and won the title. That's when he found himself, when he was, you know, touring Europe and doing the camps and stuff. That's when he found the character to you know, to catapult into the SAR Wage World Champion, don't you think?
Definitely. I mean, it was that influence of William Regal and, you know, the going to WXW over in Germany. And he wrote in his book that if it hadn't been for his time in Europe, that he probably would have... He'd been at Shawn Michaels Wrestling School, but it didn't give him that full grounding that he needed. And it was from there that he was able to then come back and feel, you know, like he really wanted that world championship. And it probably was Smojo's reign as well, which showed him that, you know, a long, you know, historic reign can be achieved in modern-day wrestling because it had been so sadly sort of overlooked for so long. And, yeah, I mean, as a super fan, he was the first guy who I saw out every DVD, every match, every interview, everything of Bryan Danielson within that Ring of Honor world title reign. All of those 38 defences are just all unique. They're all against a wide variety of opponents in a wide variety of arenas, fans going rabid. It was just, at the time, it just felt, again, a bit like Samoa Joe's reign, that you were witnessing history.
Yeah.
And he did make history as at Unified, which I'm envious of that you were able to attend, Oliver. He actually unified the World Championship and the Pure Championship as well, so he made history as well during his reign. So it was just... obviously now in WWE we get to see, you know, everyone gets to appreciate Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan's, you know, wonderful, you know, talent. But back on the independent scene, you did feel very privileged to be able to see his world title reign and be one of those few people who knew of him and just saw how good he was and where he was going to go in the end. And it's just... Yeah, one of those reigns which just stands out. And I mean, I may as well throw it to you too. Do you have, because of the match quality, do you both have a favourite Bryan Danielson world title defence or match, what he had at all?
Unified.
Yeah.
Yeah, that match was... it's on a different level, in all honesty. Like I said to you, you guys up there and stuff, I think people would have traded the mothers for a Nigel McGuinness win. I stick by that. The fans, and I was there live, and it was such a privilege. And I loved Bryan, you know, I loved Bryan Danielson, and had a lot of love for Nigel McGuinness, somebody who'd, you know, British wrestler and bringing the British style to America, and then obviously he just went up a level. And then in that match, you know, he got his head rammed off the ring post, which, you know, caused a concussion. The blood that was spilling because of the aforementioned ring post. You know, Danielson hits him with the elbows to the head. And then the referee, which I believe was Todd Sinclair, checks the arm, and everyone's like... And the response to it was like, when his arm goes down, I'm getting hyped up because I always remember being there. And everyone just like shouted out, no, because his arm dropped and the bell rang and he lost his Pure Championship, which Nigel did a fantastic job of bringing up, you know, almost as far as the ROH World title, in all honesty. I remember a match from Glory by Honor the Free with Hurricane John Walters. And I tell you what, if you want to watch a pure wrestling match, go back and watch that, because it's absolutely incredible. He did a brilliant job. And once again, beating the aforementioned Samoa Joe to win the pure title in the first place. So, once again, things blending into each other. But yeah, Danielson, you know, being original, ROH original from the first show. You mentioned one of the matches earlier when Chris was introducing you, Stephen, about Super Crazy and Eddie Guerrero, and Eddie Guerrero didn't want to main event the first show. He wanted to let the new guys main event the show, because obviously he saw the company's got to build new stars, which was a classy move by Eddie Guerrero. and it was Danielson, Loki, and Christopher Daniels, and Danielson's matches against Loki, Paul London, I'm always going to mention them. You know, AJ Styles, I think he had a match at Main Event Spectacles against AJ Styles, and it was absolutely amazing. It's one of those underrated matches that, you know, you've got to pick out. And then obviously he got a little bit disillusioned with ROH, I think, in 2005, wasn't it? And then obviously he found himself in Europe. Amazing match against James Gibson to win the title in the first place.
Yeah.
And then the title reign. If you know of ROH, if you're an ROH fan, you need to seek out every single Bryan Danielson defense. And yeah, once again, the segments, because he found his interview chops by then. He turned from being an amazing hero to being someone who was hated because he was kind of holding the title and no one could beat him, and they wanted people to beat him in the end. Joe, Daniels, obviously Nigel McGuinness. I think they had like three matches, including the aforementioned unified match. Kenta. That's your favourite match, Steven. Is that your favourite match of all, Chris?
That's the one I was going to mention.
I'll let you mention it, Chris, because I'll let you talk about it, because I'll talk about it too much.
I've not seen it for years, but there is a point in the match where Kenta applies Danielson's submission, but then Danielson then hits Kenta with the go to sleep. I think it's just an amazing sequence. But that was my. I haven't seen it for years, so I can't get to too much depth on it. That's my favourite Danielson match.
And another amazing Kent's match, or two amazing Kent's matches, one against Nigel McGuinness and one against Loki at Final Battle. If you want to see what Kent can do outside of Hideo Itami, go and check out those ROH matches and any Kent Bryan Danielson match in Noah as well.
Alright, so in at number two we have Nigel McGuinness. So held the title for 545 days and defended it 38 times. He's one of the people I'm gutted I never saw live.
Me too. I love Nigel McGuinness. That reign, I thought, much like the Bryan Danielson reign, was just amazing. I mean, he beat Morishima for the championship, and obviously Morishima gave him the title and bowed to him at Undeniable on pay-per-view, which I thought was a great moment. The only man to hold the championship for a full calendar year, which I thought was a great title he gave himself. And he, some of the injuries he had during that reign as well. I mean, that match Oliver just mentioned against Kenta, seventh anniversary show. You could see sort of the shoulder being taped up and the pain what Nigel was in, but he wouldn't give away the title because he was so proud to be a champion. But I mean, looking back at it now, it's quite disturbing to watch because of just how much pain he was actually in.
Mm-hmm.
But he was such obviously as well, because he's British, I think we all have a love of him because he was an English champion and he defended the championship all over the world. And I mean, he was the flag, I said in my notes as well here, that he was the flag bearer during the early pay-per-view era of Ring of Honor, where, much like Takeshi Morishima, he was the first, during that early period of pay-per-views for Ring of Honor, he was the guy who was the champion. And all of his defences, much like Bryan Danielson and the rest of the champions we've mentioned, but they were all amazing.
I've read that he's a personification of a fighting champion during his reign.
Definitely.
Well, if you're talking about the title matches and stuff, the one that sticks out for me that isn't unified, two that stick out for me that isn't unified, was I got to see Nigel against Austin Aries at Supercard of Honor 3, I think.
Yeah.
In Florida, I was there live. and that was amazing. But the other match that stuck out for me was the match against Tyler Black at one of the pay per views. Take No Prisoners. That's the one. But I think, unfortunately, the looking back on hindsight and stuff is that the amount of injuries that he picked up, but he wouldn't, let the ROH world title go. And obviously, fantastic matches and stuff. But I think, like you said, Stephen, when you start seeing these injuries mounting up, then you start to worry about his health, really. And I think that kind of played a key role in a lot of his championship matches.
Definitely.
So, it was, I think that's when you saw how dangerous wrestling could be at an independent level, I think.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the match, it's my favourite match of his whole reign, but probably the most, I keep saying that word disturbing, but I think it's just because looking in hindsight, we learn about medically, was the match against Austin Aries at Rising Above 2007 in the Manhattan Center when Austin Aries did the suicide dive and then he knocked Nigel's head into the barrier and the blood started coming out and you could just see how knocked out Nigel was. And any sane person now would get someone into the back and immediately take them to hospital, but Nigel fought on, and although it was, obviously he's talked about it afterwards, a bit like the Mick Foley situation, being thrown off the cell, a lot of that match he can't remember. I think he actually blacked out, it's scarier.
Wow.
But yeah, fantastic champion.
Wonderful champion.
Right, so we move on to our number one. So, something you might think is surprising, but we've gone for Jay Lethal, so a two-time world champion. He held the title for 227 days and defended it 41 times. So he was in the middle of his historic ROH TV title reign when he challenged Jay Briscoe for the title.
I think it's that thing with Jay now is that he just is historic. I mean, he's the first African-American Ring of Honor World Champion, and he co-held the TV title and the world title at the same time.
Yeah.
And he did beat Jay, brilliant match, that Best in the World 2015 matches. That was a big deal as well. I remember a lot of hype about that match when that was going to come about. And Jay, really, after he'd been in Impact, TNA, he just gradually worked up the ranks from, again,
he was very much a comedy wrestler in TNA with his Black Machismo character. So it was quite... So it did take a while for him to become serious again.
Yeah.
He went into TNA and he was serious, wasn't he? It was only his Black Machismo character that kind of, allowed him to go up the card. Because when he was serious, he was having great matches. He just wasn't connecting with the crowd.
No. He definitely... made more of a connection when he had that character behind him. Mm-hmm. But what was sad was that we lost a lot of Jay Lethal's ability as a wrestler. And thankfully, when he went back to Ring of Honor, he was able to show just how, sort of skilled he is technically. And he then, when he became part of the House of Truth, and he was able to, a bit like, we were saying earlier about characters and things, he was able to develop his character and he was able to develop his cockiness a lot more as a champion and be able to back himself in terms of what he was able to deliver. And he just, it might shock a lot of people that he's number one, but he really in these recent years has, I mean he's the longest reigning champion now ever in Ring of Honor history. Fair enough, not the longest single reign, but mm-hmm. the most combined days of all time. He really does deserve to be number one, and his amount of great matches he's had against so many opponents again.
He's got the record for most defenses as well. I think 41.
Yeah.
Particularly during his first reign, he was like, what a world champion is. He wrestled all over the world. I think Preston City Wrestling is against Noam Dar and Doug Williams, Rev Pro against Mark Haskins. I think WCPW was against El Ligero, I think he defended the title against.
Yeah. Maybe.
and in Canada against Lance Storm, and then he was at Wrestle Kingdom 10 against Michael Elgin. So
I think he recently as well wrestled David Starr in Israel as well, possibly for the Ring of Honor World Championship before he lost it to
Matt Taven.
They sold that match at the last second. They made it a non-title match.
Oh, did they?
Because of David Starr coming out against Ring of Honor and stuff.
Yeah. It's a shame, that.
I don't really have that much to say about Jay Lethal. Loved the early stuff when he was Samoa Joe's protege and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool. His title reign was kind of a couple of years, maybe a few years after I kind of, lost kind of contact with ROH, really. I watched a few shows here and there on the pay-per-view service they had. Always been a fantastic wrestler. I wasn't sure he could be the face of the company, and obviously he was. In terms of a great match that he had in TNA, just because we mentioned that stuff, against Kurt Angle for the X Division title.
Yeah.
Probably his best as that machismo. I think I saw the match against Jay Lethal that you mentioned before. I'm not sure, if he deserves to be number one, I guess, because of the number of title defenses and how long he's been in the company and obviously how long he held the title, the reigns and stuff. I think other people could have been number one over Jay Lethal in all honesty, but that's probably because I didn't see that much of his reign. Really grew as a competitor between the, Special K days up until his ROH World Title reign. So, definitely worthy of being in the top 10. I just dispute the fact that he's number one.
It's always a good thing about top 10s. And I mean, the thing with Ring of Honor as well, and this topic as a whole, is that each of the majority of the people we've spoken about could easily have been a number one in terms of
some people would say, why have you booked Kevin Steen in there or Tyler Black? Or,
Kevin Steen actually.
Yeah.
No, the top 10 is probably on the whole, worthy of being a top 10 of all the ROH World Champions. I think I just dispute some of the places, but.
Huge thanks for joining us, Steve. Do you want to promote your anything you want to promote? Do you want to promote your social media before we go?
Yeah, like I said earlier, you can catch me on Twitter if you want to follow me at @DJ215. You can find me and Aaron Green's wrestling podcast, our own podcast, at Brit Wrestle Chat. That's on Twitter, and it's the British Wrestle Chat. You'll be able to find that on Podbean. Member of the Wrestling Estate, so at the Wrestling Est is the EST, Est is our Twitter handle, so the Wrestling Estate, lots of articles, independent wrestling articles and various other written wrestling articles and journalism from me and my colleagues, and I think that's everything I'd like to...
So we've got plenty of interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks. We've got Jason from the Love of Wrestling event coming on again this week. Then we've got Britannia wrestling promoter Steve Saxon on next week. So, and then, plenty. We're in talks with lots of people, so hopefully we're going to have loads of interviews for you in the next couple of weeks. So if you enjoy our show, follow us on Twitter. It's at BBGWpod. Same on Facebook and on Instagram.
And before we go, if I could just promote my wrestling books as well. I've got a British wrestling book, Fans Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, where you can read about the aforementioned Nigel McGuinness, Brian Danielson, ROH World Title, your title match from ROH Unified in 2006, amongst other things. I've got a WWE book, Fans Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, where I go through all the Raw, SmackDown Live, NXT takeovers in that year. And my third book is Fans Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, where I take you through the before, during and aftermath of my live trip to do Florida, and my live attendance of WrestleMania 24, and they're available on the fans perspective .pcartel.com, on paperback signed, on Kindle, and on your local Amazon. Thank you very much.
Okay, and we'll see you soon. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.